Hey everybody, Lauren here. I wanted to let you all know that we have a trigger warning for this episode. We do mention thoughts of suicide. It is not graphic or explicit by any means, but I did want to let you know. And I wanted to give you the number for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline here in the United States for you or someone you love if they're struggling with thoughts of suicide. So that number is 800-273-8255. Also, a little note about the audio in this episode. It's a little spotty on my end, and I do apologize for the creakiness. I'll do better next time. But for now, we're leaning into the imperfection. I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to The Ugly Podcast. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Emerson. And we're trying really hard not to try so hard.
Come hang out with us as we talk about our passion for creativity, authenticity, and heart-centered entrepreneurship. Did I say that right?
Yep, definitely.
We're back.
We are back.
We haven't recorded for so long. Mm-hmm. Anybody that listens will still have gotten episodes, but this is like our first time recording since before your wedding.
True. Everyone's probably like, it's been a week.
Yeah. So how was your wedding? Share with everybody. I mean, I was there. It was lovely.
Yeah, it was lovely. I like really focused the weekend on like wanting to spend time with people. And I had 4 different events of things like I got to sit and spend time with people. And it was just so lovely. And the day was lovely. It was a beautiful day. It was crazy windy. And we had some snafus, but generally just really beautiful how it came together and how everyone came together for us. So yeah, all of the talking I did about improvising and figuring things out and trying things, it all really came together.
Yeah, it did. And you were so well prepared because we needed tape to pull down the tablecloths. And we were just like, Emerson, tape. And you're like, I got it.
Well, that is a good thing to bring up because that relates back to our perfectionism episode where it's like sometimes perfectionism makes things like way better. It would have just been such a more difficult day if I hadn't thought through like every single possible thing. And actually the only things that were problems were things that were completely out of my control. Could not have prepared for them. They just happened and I had to accept them like the wind. So yeah, that is a very interesting point.
Yeah, well, I loved it. It was probably my favorite wedding I've ever been to because it was just so you and all of your friends are so cool. I loved talking to them and it was just a great day.
Yeah, well, and you know, and I can share with others, we expected to be there all day and our families were like, okay, we're leaving, bye, really early in the day. And so we got to sit with just like our most supportive friends and have just this like lovely circle of like having poems being read to us like yours and having cupcakes with people and laughing. And it was just really beautiful how that part especially came together because that wasn't planned. That was just people organically wanting to be there.
Absolutely. It was so nice.
Yeah. And I think we should check back in about my painting that you guided. If anyone listened before, they know that we had, instead of a guest book, we had a guest painting. And you decided during the podcast, you were like, oh my God, I can be your art guide. And you were, and it was amazing. And I do feel like we got pretty much everyone to do it. So I'm very happy with it.
Yeah, I think we did get pretty much everyone. A lot of people said this. They'd get there and they'd be like, oh, I'm not very artistic. And I'm like, that's cool. And there were a few times I did it with them and I was just like, yeah, it can just be like this. And I just put another line on it just to show them it really doesn't matter. We just want it to be you. And it went really well.
Yeah, I haven't talked to you about how it went. So it's really cool to hear that. And I know like one of my favorite things on it, probably my favorite thing because it's so distinctive. There's a old family friend of Maddie's, basically family to him. The dad is this old rancher who pretty much only speaks Spanish, and he drew this like cute little horse for us. And it's just like the cutest thing having like we never would have gotten a painting of a horse from him if we weren't like, no, you have to paint something.
Yeah, it was great. Well, I thought it'd be fun, especially because today our topic, we're going to be talking about the ebb and flow of business, of life, of emotions, because everything ebbs and flows. But I thought it'd be fun to kind of add a segment into our episodes celebrating our wins for the week, especially because there are going to be times when maybe we have a harder time finding the wins. But I think it's important to like reach in there and pull out something that you find to be a win. So is there anything that you want to celebrate this week?
Yeah, it's been in development for a little while, but next Wednesday, I'm doing a presentation with my end-of-life doula training program, Going with Grace, and they invited me to speak on living and dying well with dementia. So I basically get to go talk to like end-of-life doulas and basically just like go on my whole spiel about dementia and how it relates to death advocacy and how we share this vision of creating better experiences for people. So I am feeling really excited about that.
That's so great. I'm so excited for you.
Yeah. What is your win?
I officially am giving my perfectionism workshop. It's going to be tailored to be a little different, but I'm giving it at a writing summit. And I went to this guy, Daniel Wallace. He puts on these writing summits every few months. And I contacted him and asked if I could participate. And he loved my idea. And we just talked on the phone earlier this week. And so I'm going to be presenting at his writing summit, which I'm really excited about.
Yay! That's awesome.
Yeah. Look at us going and speaking in front of people.
Yeah. It's so exciting to make a connection with a group, you know, because there's so many people out there doing so many different things. And so when you are able to like align your work with someone else's and like have this mutually beneficial like sharing, it's a really beautiful, exciting thing. So I look forward to us reporting back on how it went.
Definitely. And actually that was I went to a marketing workshop. And I've been to so many marketing workshops because I don't really know how to market myself. But this was like the only one that was actually useful, saying one of the most impactful things you can do is to pair up with other people and like boost each other instead of this kind of scarcity mindset where you're like, well, I have to have all of the clients. You're just like spreading the wealth and building off of each other's work. And it's just so much more impactful to do it that way.
Yeah. So you just inspired something that I think we should use. So, you know, the term solopreneur?
Yeah.
So I feel like what we're doing here and what you're talking about now is like, I don't know what the word should be, but like collabopreneur or something, or like copreneurs, because yeah, like that's so much of it is like, you're kind of creating your own coworkers and your own like work environment and your own collaborations and partnerships. And that's a really cool thing to like delve into. And the focus in the mainstream is just like, you're just a person doing your own thing. You're building a business. It's hard. It's just you against the world. And it's like, oh my gosh, it's not. Like, it's a whole web.
I love that idea. Collabpreneur. Maybe we need to come up with a better word, but I love it. I love the idea. And that's like, I mean, that's what you and I have been doing from the start. When I first started, I was like, I want to work with you on Wednesdays and just like have kind of a space for us to do our own thing, but feed off of each other and give each other ideas and boost each other on social media and all this stuff. That's what we've been doing. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think I've told you this yet, but I recently deleted my Twitter. But before I did, I saw this tweet about relationship anarchy, which is a term I always associated just with polyamory. I saw it as being the same. But it's basically the idea that like, you can form your relationships in any way. And there's so many kinds of relationships to have. And one of the things it mentioned was creative partnerships. And I was like, oh yeah, Lauren and I definitely have a creative partnership. And that's a really like rich relationship that is really fun, you know? And I love thinking of creating those kinds of relationships because we really have this dichotomy of like, well, I have a partner and I have my friends. And there's so many more possibilities for relationships.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. So, like I mentioned, our topic is ebb and flow of creativity, of productivity, of business, of all of life and all of things. Do you have any initial thoughts?
I hate ebbing and flowing. That's my primary thought. I like when things are static. Like I cleaned the house so well before the wedding. And I just like, I like when it's like, yes, things are good. Or like even having a house, which I will not have in a few weeks. Like I just, it's just nice to have stability. And ebb and flow is like, you just have to like, you just have to ride it. And it's not fun.
It's not. I agree. Especially because I feel like I'm slowly getting back into the flow, but I was really ebbing there for a few weeks. And yeah, it's like this, it's uncomfortable and you feel like it's going to last forever. Like no matter what it is, there's no solution. This is going to be my life from now on. And your brain can't seem to figure out that it's okay.
Yeah, that's a good point. It can be encouraging to remember that there's an ebb and flow. Usually I'm like, I hate it. I don't want it to happen. But yeah, then there's the times when it's like, you know, I do want it to keep ebbing and flowing.
Yeah. So, I mean, that kind of seeps into my first question, which is like, how have you historically dealt with ebb and flow in your life?
I don't think I have dealt with it. I've just like not liked it. And I mean, I guess I have. I mean, I've gone through a lot of ebb and flow, a lot of different seasons and, you know, different experiences of things. So I guess I have done it. I've just been mad about it the whole time.
Yeah. Sometimes that's all you can ask for is do it, but be mad about it.
Well, especially in our 20s, I feel like it was just like, this is happening. Okay. And that worked. It did work. We got through it. So that's my my philosophy.
For me, I feel like, you know how babies have like take a while to get object permanence into their brains? Well, I feel like with ebb and flow, I get in this mindset of like feeling permanence. And like, I think that if I'm doing, if something's going poorly for me, it's then all of the good times have disappeared. They don't exist anymore. And I just feel like I'm in this state of permanence. I think so much of that has stemmed from like my years of depression, where like those years lasted for years. Like, the years lasted for years. And so anytime I get back into a space of being feeling down, or I mean any kind of negative, perceivingly negative emotion, I think like, shit, I'm back into it. I'm never going to leave this place. Like, it's gonna overwhelm me again. So that's how I've historically felt about it. And it's taken a lot of work to kind of start to remind myself that just because things aren't good right now doesn't mean they never will be again.
Yeah, it's a mental flexibility that we have to like practice and work that muscle. Because yeah, I feel like there's something about being human that I probably learned in a psychology class where you're like it's like a negativity bias or something where you're like, this is it, this is terrible, it's gonna last forever. And you just, it's like, it's contrary to the nature of our brain to be like, oh no, actually it's okay.
Exactly. So when you first started your business, how did you start to kind of manage that in order to not get overwhelmed in the ebb?
My first year of business was so hard on me because I also got diagnosed with ADHD that year. And something I've learned about ADHD, which is really interesting, is like, there's this idea that brains should be consistent and, you know, have a steady work pace. And something that happens with ADHD, I saw it described as like an orbit, where it's like sometimes you're like close to the sun moving fast. I don't know if that's how it works. But like, you know, sometimes it's the orbit's closer and then sometimes it's far away. And so like, I'll have these spurts and then it'll be like this long period of not being able to do anything and then another spurt. And so for the first year of my business, it was just like there's so much to do and I was so overwhelmed that I would have like weeks of struggle and then I'd pull all-nighters. And I pulled probably 5 all-nighters last year, and I would get like hours and hours and days and weeks worth of work done in that all-nighter. And obviously that wasn't good for me. So that's how I dealt with it. But how I'm doing it now is going into the second year, now that I have some things settled, I made a rule. I don't pull all-nighters. I don't work past generally 8 p.m. I usually get a later start and then end a bit later. Yeah. And just having a bit more control over those orbits and not letting them get quite so unsustainable.
Yeah. I just had a vision of like, you know, when a plate's like, if a plate's on a thing and it's like wobbling and then it gets like off balance and then it just quickly like flies off into the room.
Yeah. And that's what ADHD is. Basically that. And then you have to pick up the pieces and get new plates and do it all again, and they're going to crash again. And yeah, I am slowly but surely learning how to just not spin my plates.
Good. Yeah, I had to start meditating a lot my first year because, yeah, I was just devastated at every no that I got. It just felt like this was a bad idea. Like, why did I do this? And so I had to keep kind of just repeating the mantra, like, this too shall pass. This isn't going to be forever. Things will get easier. And then I also had to start keeping a jar for myself. That is my fucking hooray jar. And I will have to bleep that for the radio edit. But that's, if people have never heard My Favorite Murder, they have this segment called Fucking Hoorays, where they just celebrate something. And I had to start doing that. And I'd write little notes for myself of like, I got my business license, or I heard back from a person who was willing to talk to me. Just like little things that I had to just keep adding to remind myself that I'm progressing, and that I wasn't just like stuck, and that there will be flow coming, but that I'm here for now. So that's what I had to start doing.
Have I shown you mine yet?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Happy Memories first year, and I put all my wins and stuff. Like, you literally, in one of our work sessions, you mentioned it, and I was like, yep, and immediately started writing some that I'd already had, and then I just kept collecting them. And at the end of the year, I was going to make a list of, like, all my wins, and then I was like, no, they're in this jar. Like, this is my, like, first year win jar.
I love that. And then you just have, like, a little capsule.
Yeah, it's so nice, and, like, it just is so satisfying to like hold it and know that I've had this many wins. And then of course I've had them since then too. And I no longer feel like I need to collect them, which is nice. Like, I maybe should, because it's helpful to have those wins. But in the first year, especially, like, I needed to remind myself every single day that I had some level of success happening.
Exactly. It's kind of that thing with like practicing gratitude. You have to take moments to be grateful for what's going on in your life. You have to reach in and intentionally remind yourself what's going well so you don't get overwhelmed with the things that aren't going the way you want them to.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of ebb and flow, I have a gratitude journal that I used to force myself to write 10 things every single day. And then I would stop doing it completely. And then I'd do it again when I needed it. And now what I do is I just write however many I want, whenever I want. So I found a really natural ebb and flow with that. And I go months sometimes without it because I'm just feeling grateful without writing it down. And then there's times, like maybe now with how stressful things are, that it might be good to be writing them again.
Yeah, that's a really good reminder. So name a time when things were ebbing, either professionally or creatively. How did you handle it?
I think we heard a lot of that in a few episodes ago, where I was like, I don't know where I'm going. Like, I'm like just hitting walls. I did not know how to move forward at all. And a lot of that was just like sitting with it and letting myself be like a really petty, discouraged mess. And letting people talk to me through that. Like, my partner and you and other people were like, even my mom was like, you're successful in a lot of other ways. Like, just because you're not making a lot of money doesn't mean you're not having an impact. And it helped to have other people to bounce that off of, to let myself be how I was, but to also let myself be encouraged.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
I was trying to think of a specific moment, and I honestly, like, things ebb all the time, both creatively and professionally. It's just so consistent, and like, but then like the flows are consistent too. So I think the most recent one was after I hit that, and I think I talked about this on a previous episode, where I hit a point with my creativity where I got past like the creative lust, and like everything was really exciting, and I was like, I have so many ideas and everything is great. And then I like hit this wall, and it was just like, oh no, I actually have to put work into this relationship with my creativity. And it became like, oh God, I was very discouraged and like didn't feel like I had any ideas anymore. And I was just like, oh no, everything I've been saying has been nonsense. I am so stupid. Like, it, and so like I really had to lean into that meditation that like, okay, take a moment to just like experience this feeling and acknowledge it. don't just dismiss yourself and tell yourself you're stupid. And then just, I just kept showing up. And I think that was the key thing to get past that ebbing state, was to just keep showing up day after day, keep journaling, keep, even there were a few times where I worked on my book and I wrote a few sentences and was just like, I'm probably going to delete these. I hate this. This is dumb. And then wrote another sentence and called it a day, you know? But yeah, that was kind of the key thing for me.
Yeah, I really relate to what you're saying of the, it's like it ebbs constantly. Like it's hard to delineate a specific time because it's just a lot of it all the time.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's so frustrating because that is just the way life is. I mean, I might be getting a little dark here, but like with my depression, I was suicidal for years. And I kind of got to this point where I didn't actively want to die, but I was like, I understand the appeal, because all of this like back and forth, this like deep depression and like these moments of contentment and joy, like it's just a lot of back and forth and it's really overwhelming. And so there are times where you're just like, gosh, living's exhausting. And you can tell me if that was too dark and I should cut it, and I will. But
no, I feel the same way. And I think that's a lot of why I started this conversation saying I hate ebb and flow, is because the emotional landscape of my first 25 years was so tumultuous and constantly shifting. And that's why I just want to just be happy and have a nice life. And a lot of it's, you know, I've had the same experiences with you of like not seeing the appeal in life, which is crazy now looking back, because I'm like, I love life. But in the environment I was in, it was, I couldn't love life and couldn't, you know, be free of that tumultuous back and forth. And so I think that's where the discomfort comes from.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, if you were dark, I'm dark too.
That's why we're friends.
That is why we're friends. It literally is.
Yeah.
What grounds you when you feel like the ebb and flow is too much?
Well, like I mentioned, meditation, then very good. And we also mentioned this, gratitude. And then things like puzzles and just like going on really long walks with my dog. Just times when I'm able to like step out of my brain for a minute. Because if I get too contemplative, if I'm like, okay, I'm just going to journal this out, then I sometimes get in these like thought loops of just like, nah, everything's bad. Like I just talk myself in circles and can't really get out of that mindset of like, this is never going to change. And so like stepping out of my brain, letting myself zone out, turning on a podcast while I'm doing puzzles and stepping outside of myself for a little bit is really helpful. So I don't get into that sneaky hate spiral. Do you remember that comic?
Yeah. Oh, sneaky hate spiral. Well, first of all, you saying about doing puzzles makes me want to do a puzzle. And then I was like, I'm moving, which is a puzzle. So yeah. So what grounds me? My dog barking in the background does not ground me. My other dog does. And actually, so I have had this like morning anxiety. I remember first feeling it in 2015 when things were really, really bad for me. And it ebbs and flows like most things. And when things get stressful, I'll wake up between like 4 and 6 in the morning, like skyrocketing anxiety. And I haven't figured out a way to calm myself then. And like, I've tried all these different things. And one that I just thought of this morning, so I have no idea if it's going to work, but I was thinking hand, breath, and touch. So if I like feel my hands, feel like my physical presence, feel my breath, and touch, whether it's like my dog or my partner or just something near me, I think those three things might help. Because my problem has been that when the anxiety is so high about all the different things that are happening, if I can just get out of my head, like you were saying, like doing something to disconnect from all the thoughts and the spiraling, because that's what happens. It's basically a morning spiral. I think those three things are hopefully enough to get me out of my head.
I think it will be, because that's exactly the same thing that I use. I use the 5-4-3-2-1 method. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of that one?
I have, and I'm not patient enough for it. It's like my like.
Fair enough.
I'll get to like number five. Like I'll start listing like three things and I'm like, this is too much.
Yeah. So I do like your shortened version. That is good. But like, yeah, for anybody that doesn't know, it's when you name five things you can see, four things you can touch, three things you can hear, two things you can smell, and one thing you can taste. And you're supposed to like say them out loud and describe them a little bit. So just like, I see my shirt, it is red. But that has gotten me out of several panic attacks now. So I highly recommend that. Wow. But also your shortened method seems perfect if it's too much.
Well, and I believe the 5-4-3-2-1 was meant for panic attack. And I feel like that's a time when like you do need to take that time and focus on 5-4-3-2-1 because yeah, if your brain's going through so much that it can be really grounding. Mm-hmm. In my normal life, I'm like, no, too many things, but that is a good idea. I should keep in mind. So what is something good that came out of a frustrating season for you?
So many things have come out of frustrating seasons. I like started to write them down and I was just like, oh yeah, obviously like some of the best things have come out of frustrating seasons. Like my relationship with you came out of a frustrating season and my business came out of a frustrating season working in a terrible job that I hated. My ugly art came out of a frustrating season of not being able to get enough editing work. I was like, well, I can't get enough editing work, so I'm going to like play around with my own creativity some more. And then I did, and everything's been getting so much more joyful and lovely. Yeah, so a lot of really good things have come out of frustrating seasons, which I love that you asked this question because I've never actually thought about that before, written them down and been like, oh, I should be so grateful for these times in my life that were so hard because look at all these great things that came out of it.
Yeah. When I hadn't thought about this before, but I just realized it, and I talk about this all the time, so I'm surprised I hadn't thought about it. One of the things I really like to point out as a doula is like, I'm an end-of-life doula, but you can be a doula for so many things and almost everything in life, like there's a labor for it. So any art project you do or any like move like we're doing right now or any business or really anything that takes a while is a labor. And it's usually really frustrating because you just want it to be there already. Like I want to have a house in Washington and I want to like have written a book and have a thriving business. But all of those are labors that I'm still really in the process of, like probably in like the first trimester. And sometimes it's not trimesters, it's like 10, you know? And yeah, I think basically anything we do comes out of a frustrating season, but we don't realize that when it's happening. And maybe it would change things if we did realize it.
We're just like feet up in the stirrups, screaming and sweating and like something good will come out of it.
Yeah, it's a lot of that. It's just, and it's not pretty. Everyone talks about like the pregnancy glow and stuff. And it's like, yeah, but actual pregnancy is like really gory and uncomfortable. And, you know, some people love it, but it's like, there's also a lot to not love. And that's true of most processes and labors of anything.
Yeah. My sister-in-law hated being pregnant, was like so ready for it to be done. But like, obviously, wonderful thing came out of it. Little Sebastian. And yes, that is his name. And yes, I sing the song from Parks and Rec to him whenever. Aww. I see him.
Good, as you should.
What is something good that's come out for you?
Yeah, I think of so many things. Like when I look back at my life, like anything that I've accomplished was frustrating. One that comes to mind, I don't know why, changing my name was like that, where I knew I wanted to do it, but it took so long to get. Like, and actually name changes are a really interesting thing because there's a argument to be made that like it's a shift in your identity. And like by changing your name, like I was told by someone once, it takes like 6 months after changing your name for you to like fully step into it. And I actually really felt that. And it was really frustrating, like wanting to be Emerson, but not being there yet. There's been a lot of things like that where it's like, I really want something to just be there. But it has to take a process. And it's something that, you know, you think something like a name change is like, oh, I just go to the courthouse, I change it and it's done. And it's like, you have to think through it, make sure it's the name you want. You have to really feel into it. You need to have other people acknowledge you as that. You need to figure out the legal process. And then after the legal process, you need to go change 50 different things, all your accounts and all your different stuff. So yeah, that was a really frustrating time. And now I look back, it's been, oh my gosh, how long has it been? Five years. I think I just celebrated 5 years. And now it's just like a memory.
Yeah.
I don't know why that was my example, but that was just one that always sticks out to me as having been really frustrating.
Yeah. No, I could totally see how that would be frustrating, especially because you're also having to like explain it to people and like wait for people to honor that and like not keep slipping up on your name. I mean, I'm sure it might have been similar, like the process of coming out as non-binary and being like, my pronouns are they, them, and having to go through that process with your closest loved ones of them constantly like misgendering you and stuff, you know? I mean, you can tell me if I'm wrong.
Oh, it's very true. And it's so funny because I feel like the name one, I'm giving it as an example because, you know, the question was something good that came out of a frustrating season. And my name, like pretty much everyone acknowledges me as that. And I feel like my pronouns, I didn't give as an example of that because it hasn't gotten to the good part yet, you know, like,
gotcha.
And it probably never will. But yeah, like that's something that's still in a labor, which is really frustrating. Because it's like, okay, cool, you see my name, but like also my pronouns, please. And yeah, I'm probably still in that frustration. And it's a good reminder to me to be like, I will get to a place in my life where I am primarily recognized as they, them. And I am, but they, them pronouns are so hard because you can be really recognized by your closest loved ones, but then you're going to have all your distant loved ones and all your acquaintances and people at the grocery store, and everyone is not going to use them. So it'll probably take a few decades.
Yeah, I did have an experience at a grocery store recently, which I am very excited for you to move up here because I hope that this can be more of your experience in Washington. But I was waiting at some counter or something, anyway, at a grocery store, and these other two people were standing next to me, and they were also waiting for a cashier. And like the cashier person came up and was like, okay, who was first? And the people there gestured to me and they said, oh, they were there first. And I was just like, oh, you didn't assume my gender. Like, that's really nice.
Oh, awesome. Well, and that's nice that you would appreciate that too. Because a lot of people are like, well, I don't think that people should default to they because I'm not they. I want them to see me and recognize me as what I am. But it's like, I think it's liberating to just know that people are giving you that respect regardless of whether you like need it or not.
Especially as somebody who just like thoroughly loves and supports the LGBTQ community, I'm like, hell yeah. Like I love that you're being careful and intentional about who you're addressing and not just making assumptions about people. And like, I think using they, them is such a great way to honor that and to respect that. And yeah, I love it.
Yeah. I feel the same way about masks. Like, I don't feel like the extreme need to be protected. I'm triple vaccinated and work from home and don't have a lot of exposure to people I could affect. But it just encourages me to see someone wear a mask. It just feels like this act of benevolence, and it's nice to see it.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so let's get into some more like fun pieces. So what about times when things have been flowing, either professionally or creatively? Explain what that was like.
To go back to the one from like a few episodes ago, when everything came together for that, it was one of the coolest moments I've ever had of seeing everything come together. Because over the past year, I've done all these different things that are all separate, and I thought they would remain separate. And seeing them all come together was like doing a puzzle and just feeling just that energy of everything coming into a clear picture. And that was really exciting and continues to be exciting. And I don't know if I've talked about it much yet here, but I'm starting a program in July called From Panic to Power, basically to help people with their relationship to dementia, that most of us have just this inherent dread and panic and just absolute terror about the experience. And I am uniquely equipped as an end-of-life doula and coming from life enrichment memory care and coming from the groups, advocacy groups I'm part of, I can offer a lot of resources for that to be like, maybe we don't have to just be scared. here's a ton of different tools and resources and things we can do to feel more empowered. So yeah, that's something that's continuing to flow. There's a bit of ebb and flow in it because I'm like, is anyone going to sign up? Like, I have to get it all, you know, organized and figure things out. But it does still feel like it's flowing because it feels right.
Absolutely. And as you were talking, I'm trying not to like interrupt you too much because I've noticed as I edit these podcasts that I'm an active listener. So I'll be like, But then it like messes up with the audio. So I'm like over here, like silently like dancing while you're talking because I'm excited. Like, don't want to interrupt you.
I had to also, as you were saying that, be like, yes, don't make any noises, but I feel the same way.
Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah, I'm excited. What about you? What's something that has like a time when things have been flowing?
When I first started sharing my ugly art stuff and like when I first did the experiment with my friends and then with you, I really felt like I was getting into a flow and I started like writing little short stories for myself and I just had this whole creative awakening and it just like everything was feeling right and I was connecting with people and it just felt really good and at peace in my body and like a happy buzzing feeling just that everything was going well. However, I did realize that when I was in that state of flow, there was also kind of like a mania to it. I was just really like up and like excited and there did come a day where like things were so good, but they were just so many emotions attached to it. And like, I ended up just like bawling at the end of the day because I had so much built up in my system. And like one tiny thing happened with Jordan. I can't remember what it was. The smallest of arguments. And I just burst into tears. Like all of the emotions just poured out of me. I was like, oh yeah, excitement is very close to anxiety. And so it was interesting to have that experience of, oh, even when things are flowing, I should still be like meditating and bringing myself into the present moment because like there is so much emotion and joy when it comes to, like you said, birthing out your big project and like seeing the joy of that. It's overwhelming.
Yeah. Well, and you bring up a really good point that I definitely think of ebb as bad and flow is good. And both of them are really intense in different ways and really good in different ways. They can grow you in different ways. And yeah, I felt the same thing with my business. Sometimes I am like nearly manic about it. And especially with a history of mental illness, I get kind of scared where I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel too good about this, which is exciting. It's like being in love where you're like on this high. But yeah, it's times like that. It's like, okay, maybe it is good if the flow starts to recede a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel like when the flow starts to ebb, like you start kind of comparing things to that moment and you're just like, oh, it's never going to be that good again. It's never going to get back to that point. I don't know if you do that same thing.
Yeah, I definitely like, I'm like, oh, goodbye forever to that wonderful feeling. And it can be really discouraging going down off of it. And that's another thing that we can talk forever about, but how do you hold yourself and move forward in the times when you're, you know, watching that flow go down and start to recede?
But isn't it so funny that we don't do that same thing when the ebb starts to go away?
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
It's so funny because, yeah, like every time, especially with ADHD, because I'm constantly ebbing and flowing with everything in my life with it. And every time I'm like, well, this is it. My house will be clean forever now. And I'm absolutely convinced every time that like, oh, now I'm done ebbing ever. I will never reach those depths again. And then like 3 days later, I'm there again. I'm still trying to get my brain to understand that.
Yep.
So what are you looking forward to after emerging from a current season of frustration?
I am really looking forward to a deeper connection with my creativity, especially coming from that really high manic lust for creativity and then dipping into this lull. As I'm coming out of it now, I feel like a little more maturity seeping into my creativity and just a deeper connection and also a further understanding of like how I can help other people along this path. especially because I'm so new in this space. Like, I feel like people who have been accessing creativity for so long, like, they have such wisdom built up in that long-standing relationship with it. But, like, I feel like there's definitely a need for people that are just getting into it of this is how great it can be. And the further along I get into it, the more, like, I get kind of that hindsight understanding of what this process has been like for me. And that maybe I can, like, be better equipped to help other people go through that process.
Yeah, that's a really good meaning to make out of it, that every time you ebb and flow, it's bolstering your professional capacity to support other people through ebb and flow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice way to think of it, at least.
Yeah, exactly.
I am researching.
What are you looking forward to?
Well, if you noticed during this, I mentioned houses multiple times. Mm-hmm. And that is really related to how we're moving in 2 weeks, and we don't know where we're moving to, which is really tied up in my personal and professional lives, what path I'll be going down and what opportunities will be there, and how the paths might merge and not be just this dichotomy I think of them as. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to, like, having somewhere to land and somewhere to be for a while and to build relationships with, you know, our community there and our, I want to have clients. I want to have in-person clients. I intentionally did not have any in-person clients in Arizona because I knew I was moving away. And with memory loss, that's something I want to be there for them for years if I can. So yeah, I see us moving towards a place of being in a really fruitful location, but it feels absolutely impossible right now. So I'm practicing trust every day. Every day we look for housing and get discouraged and then get excited and then get discouraged. But I can see it. I can feel it on the other side, hopefully.
It'll come together in some way or another.
Maddie and I have been talking about this because it's exactly what you've been talking about, where it's like you get to that point where you're like, it's never going to be good again. We will never have housing again. We will simply not have any, like, this, like, it simply will not work out. And I'm reminding myself every day, like, no, every single time you have felt like this, which with anxiety is basically every single day, it always works out. So obviously it's going to, but it doesn't feel like it right now.
Yep.
This is a good time to point out we got tattoos on our honeymoon. And I don't know if I mentioned it on the podcast, but my roller coaster tattoos. So I have this cute little, like, cartoony roller coaster on the back of both my ankles. So the roller coaster with the cart is on my left ankle, and then the other half of it is on the right. So it's kind of like that's the roller coaster that's going on. And right now it feels like I'm at that point where I'm jumping from one leg to another.
Yep. I love that. Yeah. I think you did mention that on the improvisation episode.
Yeah. It's a really good ebb and flow one because that's what it represents. I got it to represent, like, life is a roller coaster. It's constantly moving up and down and around. And we actually just went on the roller coaster in Vegas at New York, New York. And it reminded me so much, like, that's what it feels like right now. It's like you're going, like, every single direction, and that one goes, flips you all the way, so your head's upside down. And yeah, that's where we're at.
You're upside down.
You're upside down, yes. And we're screaming.
Awesome. Well, we've reached that point. What is something ugly you made this week?
Yeah.
Or in the past 3 weeks since we haven't recorded for a while?
Yeah. So when I came back from the wedding and honeymoon, it was just a mess of, like, suitcases and boxes and all this stuff. And I had very little, like, mental space to be creative. And I saw that and I was like, no, I'm going to do something. And so I got out my art journal, which essentially is an ugly art journal. When I started it, I was like, oh yes, it'll be like a sketchbook where I make nice things. And it's absolutely just ugly art, which is awesome. And totally your fault in a good way.
Yay.
Yeah. But I, you know, I had such limited capacity to do anything, but I just did, like, you know, spirographs.
Yeah.
The spiral things. I basically did, like, spirographs by hand where I just kind of, like, did circles and I tried to do different shapes and stuff. And it actually turned out really cool. Like, you kind of get in this, like, flow, and that was fun. I enjoyed it. It was like a very brief kind of release, but it was really cool and ugly and fun.
I love that. It's also like kind of meditative too, of just like circle, like putting it out there. Yeah, I love it.
And it's not really true to what things feel like right now. Like right now, it's just like, I just need to scribble and just make a mess. And it was really nice.
Yeah.
What about you? What's something ugly you made?
The main ugly thing that I made was I had no idea what to write for my... So I've been writing this book, and it's a magical realism, and I just... I needed it to be more suspenseful, and so I just, like, wrote a really awful, semi-suspenseful, like, nightmare scene, and it was just really bad. Like, I got to the end of it, and I was like, this is trash. But, like, I was just glad I got it out of me. You know, that's sometimes all you can do is just write a really bad scene in your book and then fix it later.
Well, and I feel like you bring that unique offering to writing, because every writing course and program and ideology I've been in is like, you know, well, try this different thing to make your scene good. And it's like the idea of just being like, I'm going to make a scene that's so bad that I will obviously cut it later, but it opened me up to like moving forward.
Yeah, it's like when you have to unclog a drain and you like have to sneak it and you pull out like a really nasty wad of hair and you're just like, great, that's out of there. Like, then you can throw that away. I don't think much of it is salvageable.
I insist that you make a post using that analogy. I think that's your practice, that you incorporate that into the explanation of ugly art.
I absolutely will. I will definitely do that. Yeah. Okay, where can people find you?
MakingHappyMemories.com or at Let's Make Moments on Instagram.
Cool. Anything coming up that you want to plug?
I do not have like a specific event or anything at the moment, but I am taking signups for my program. So it is actually up and available. So From Panic to Power is something that people can sign up for. They can look into it, reach out to me. I especially encourage it for people who have like family history and just kind of live with that dread all the time. It's something that if it does happen in your family or in someone you know, you'll be like, oh yeah, I got this now. So yeah, that is a thing that exists in the world.
Highly recommend for people. My great grandma had Alzheimer's. And so it's definitely like on my mind, especially because my mom and I both have just terrible memories anyway. I'm just like, I mean, I don't even know if that's related. I don't know medical things, but in my brain, I'm just like, oh yeah, obviously I'm not going to remember anything like as I get older. And your workshop, at least the one workshop that I've been to and all of our conversations since then have really helped me. So I highly recommend it to people.
I'm glad. Yeah, I recently discovered someone I mentioned in the workshop is Lynn Castile Harper. I love her work. She's amazing. And one of the things I want to include in this new version, the program, is this thing she wrote called When I Get Dementia. Instead of saying if I get dementia, she has such a strong family history that she just says when I get dementia, and it really like messes with people. They're like, wait, what? But it's a really cool idea to be like, I just embrace that, you know, sure, it'll probably happen, you know, maybe not. Like assuming you will and preparing for it instead of hoping for your entire life that you won't.
Yes, exactly.
So we will talk more on that, I'm sure, forever, as well as all of your cool things. But where can people find you, and do you have anything to plug?
Yes, people can find me at scribeandsunshine.com. And things to plug, I'm starting to do a Come As You Art, ugly art event, and I'm planning to have them on the last Thursday of every month. So check that out. It's going to be just a space to come and do ugly art with people, find community and find encouragement. If you have that voice in your head that's like, anything I create is not going to be good enough, you can come to this community of people that encourage you to do it anyway and to be silly with it and have fun. So it should be good. And it's free. It might be donation only at some point, but for now it's free. I just want people to come to it.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's a really welcoming thing to invite people to like just come and to make art. And also I think you need to be enthusiastically praised for Come As You Art. Because that's amazing.
I knew it had to be like, I had to make it a pun of some kind. And I was like, oh, Come As You Art.
That's amazing.
Well, this was great.
That's great.
And we'll talk next time. Keep it ugly.
Keep it ugly.